This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
What's up, y'all? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Monday. Boy, the Packers squeaked one out, didn't they? Yoy! What a nail-biter. Beautiful fall day down at Soldier Field. Packers taking on the Bears. When you got to rely on a blocked field goal, I don't know if that's really getting it done. Folks, you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, where we bring you real news and great conversation every day, hoping to deliver on that promise again today with you all. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. The thing about conversations is that is a participation sport. It needs you to get involved with me. I got Cardi behind the board today. If you give us a call or text, be sure that you say hello. I was supposed to be at the Bears-Packers game, my friends. And I am a little heartbroken that I wasn't. And let me tell you why. It was going to be quite the hootenanny. I was going to get together with a couple of my old buddies from law school, head on down to Chicago, maybe do a little grilling on Friday afternoon in the cool weather, see their kids, catch up, maybe have a couple of adult beverages. You know, a good Midwestern football weekend. But there was a little incident on Friday afternoon. Now, I am fortunate enough, very blessed, to have both of my parents that live 5 to 10 minutes away from me, traffic depending. What a blessing this is. I have a great relationship with my folks. I see them at least on good weeks, at least a couple times a week. In the pre-election cycle, maybe not quite as much as I would have preferred, but certainly now, post-election, get to see them a lot. And they have fallen in love with my little dog, Finny. She is a miniature dachshund. I tell everybody that she smells like pancakes, and I'm really not kidding you. She smells amazing. Who doesn't want a little dog that smells like pancakes who just wants to, like, cuddle and give you puppy eyes the whole time? She weighs a whopping 11 pounds, 3/4 on her heavy days. That's like after a full bath and soaking. In any case, back to my saga of why I was not at Soldier Field for the beautiful, amazing weather and nail-biter of a Packers win yesterday. So my parents, because they are lovely folks, often will volunteer to help dog sit Finny for me, which is huge. And it's always nice because I know she's with two people, her grandparents that love her very, very much. In any case, they're sort of new dog sitters, if you will. It's been moons since my parents had a dog. I grew up with dogs. They had a black lab Springer Spaniel mix when I was born. So we grew up with dogs, but it's been a couple of years. In any case, Finny picked up Friday afternoon, and it comes out that she wasn't particularly hungry, so my dad, trying to make sure that she was eating something, fed the poor deer a grape. One single grape. Now, the reasonable among us would be thinking to ourselves, what can a single grape do to a dog? I was sort of in that camp, but I had heard grapes very toxic to dogs, and I said, okay. Got in the car, Googled on my phone, can one grape kill my 11-pound dog? Answer, yes. So what proceeded was a freakout, a trip to the doggy emergency room, the expenditure of a few hundred dollars for, inducing her to, again, get rid of the food that she had consumed that day. We had to do a fluid flush. She had to get a blood panel. The poor thing put all up with all of it gamely. You actually have to take your dog back and get the blood panels again to be sure that their kidneys are working properly, because apparently there's some weird chemical compound in certain grapes, but not all of them. And by the way, it doesn't matter if they're red or green grapes. I learned all of this weekend. In any case, because we had to get these successive blood tests and because I did not want to be far, far away if my dog started to take a turn for the worse, I had to take a pass on the Packers-Bears game this weekend. But you all will be very relieved to know, or maybe you don't care, but I certainly am very relieved to report to all of you that my little Finny, who smells like pancakes, who just wants to kiss and love you and hang out and cuddle, is just fine, all 11 pounds, 3/4 of her. She survived the great grape caper of 2024. Did you know this, Cardi, that grapes can like drop a dog inside of a few hours, depending? I knew they were bad, but I had no idea they were this bad.
I definitely did not know that grapes kill dogs or could actually be that much harmful to a dog. I knew chocolate and certain things like that, but definitely not grapes. I'll take that into consideration.
Can you turn yourself a little bit up in my cans for you? But like, sorry. Yeah, I knew about chocolate. I knew about like onions, also not good. But I had not yet experienced the full panic of the grape consumption, the great grape debacle of 2024. But all is well. She is just fine. Back at doggy daycare today. And yes, folks, my parents will be dog sitting again. This is how we learn, a little trial and error. Right. No harm, no foul. But boy, doggy ER visits, not cheap, y'all. Man. Not cheap. Just saying. Oh, my goodness. Also in the sporting news of the weekend, Curdy, I was really curious if you or any of your friends out there or you folks listening are boxing fans and watched whatever the heck that was that occurred on Saturday night between Iron Mike Tyson and Jake Paul, the YouTuber. Did you watch this, Cardi?
So I remember Jake Paul for being on the Disney Channel or the Nickelodeon kid. And now we have him boxing against one of the greatest boxers, you know, in our history. And it's just, it seemed like the word I want to use is just a crazy show in a sense. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know if you saw a guano show, if you will. A bat guano show. Yes.
Did you see the beginning, like when they did the interview on Mike Tyson and he came out wearing the sumo wrestling diaper on, in a sense.
It was the marketing behind it. Now, folks, if you've been listening to me for a while, you do know that I'm a sports junkie. You may know that I did some boxing back in the day. The undercard, like the fight right before the Jake Paul Tyson fight, was two women boxers. And they went, I think, the full 10 rounds. It was by decision. It was an intense fight. These women were really strong in there, like going after one another. You could tell like legitimate boxing going on. But even their like walk-in processions for Jake Paul and Mike Tyson were so, caricatured, if you will. Like Iron Mike comes out basically like kind of by himself in the classic robe and like, here's Jake Paul, and I think it was a lowrider drop top, like emerald green caddy or some such. I was just like, oh, my goodness. If you are a boxing fan, I hope you didn't pay for the pay-per-view.
No.
Because that would have been a waste of your money, honeys. I mean, for real, though, not good. And there were, when Mike first came out, right, I thought, ooh, he's going to try to do some Mike Tyson and legit, like, bang, 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 like, give him a couple of quick, heavy hits because the man has those lead fists, right? Like, that was what Mike Tyson was known for. It was the ultra-quick knockout. And then it was very clear that Tyson was gassed, but it was also very clear that they're likely, this is just me wildly speculating, might have been a wee bit of a gentleman's agreement. Like, try to make it look good, but nobody's actually going to try to knock anybody out. Because there were, Jake Paul was throwing some what I'm going to call amateurish, just kind of roundhouse punches that left him wide open for the classic Tyson KO, and it just did not happen. Now, if you could have picked a winner, Cardi, who's the winner that you wanted to see come out on top of that?
Okay, so I'm not going to lie. I actually put a bet on that, and I bet it for Jake Paul to win, just because I knew it was staged. Like, I kind of figured they're going to come out. Mike Tyson was going to do what he's going to do. He had every opportunity in the fight. Clearly obvious he could have knocked him out. He just didn't want to do it. And they had, like, a huge parody on social media where they're showing, like, all his encounters where he met up with Jake Paul. And he's, like, just showing him so much love. So we clearly knew he wasn't going to, like, have this attitude towards him going into the ring.
Yeah, like, gone are the days of the Don King promotion and, like, the forehead bumping in the pre-fight and all the, you know, the weigh-ins and all that. Yeah, I don't gamble on sports. I just never had. It's not my jam. I get why it's interesting to people because everybody thinks they got the line on the line, if you know what I'm saying, right? But to me, I was looking for Mike Tyson to do some Iron Mike Tyson stuff and, like, knock Jake on his butt, proving the primacy of classically trained boxers. Oh, the sweet science. I mean, I used to watch fights with my dad, like the Friday night fights. Like, and having trained and done very traditional stand-up boxing training, I played rugby in college. The only time I've ever gotten physically sick in workouts is doing boxing training. Right. Because it is the combination of the physical exertion plus the fact that your breath and your breathing and just being able to keep your blood oxygenated while you're taking punches is just gosh darn hard, and keep some light feet and keep moving around. Whoa. Neither of those two men looked what I would call, like, sprightly on their toes. I wasn't seeing a lot of fresh leg action going in the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight. 855-757-4842. Enough about whatever the heck clown show that was this weekend, everybody. And by the way, I'm going to call it. I think Matt LaFleur is in his last season. Unless the stuff comes around, blocking kicks is not the way to NFL success, and the Packers have been just skating by. We got a great show coming up for you. We got Monday Reality Check. That's up next. What myth am I going to disprove? We're going to talk with Tom Moore from the Center for American Project Action Fund, and of course, we got Dom Salvia. Keep it locked, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Talking in my sleep at night, making myself crazy.
Welcome back, y'all, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Monday, and I thought it would be an important new addition to the show that every Monday at 2:20, we're going to do what's called your Monday reality check. And that is checking in with, you know, dispelling some nonsensical talking points that have been out there floating around for the last week. And certainly it seems like all anybody's talking about is the election outcome, the Democrats in disarray, all of these things. And it's interesting to observe, and I'm going to be pretty blunt about this, a lot of pro-Trump folks both gloating and whining at the same time. Isn't it? It's like a weird observation. Like, I've never seen sore winners in my life. And somehow they still manage to whine about what they term the far left and progressives and all this stuff. And here's the thing that needs some reality check. I've heard over and over and over again from the commentariat on the right that somehow this is supposed to be some clear Trump mandate. They go, oh, it's a landslide. It's not. It's not a landslide victory at all. We've had those. Reagan chalked up a landslide victory, right? Like, that's a landslide. What Donald Trump did was win by razor-thin margins, which look like a lot because of the Electoral College. Yes, the House flipped. Yes, the Senate flipped. But let's reality check ourselves. The Senate was always expected to flip to Republican control. The House, we're still struggling from the burden of basically racially motivated and partisan gerrymandering, which is bad for Republicans and it's bad for Democrats, but most of all, it's bad for you, the average everyday American, because it makes your elected representatives in the House of Representatives much more partisan, less willing to compromise, and frankly, far less willing to get done the things that we all agree on. Things like taxing billionaires more. Billionaires and huge corporations like Amazon and Walmart. Things like getting money out of politics. We all agree about that, that money isn't people and corporations aren't speech. You ever wonder why we haven't gotten that done? Yeah, because of gerrymandering. These are the things that have perverted outcomes. So while it is certainly disappointing that the House flipped, it wasn't outside the realm of possibility. And again, every single poll called this within the margin of error. So no, this wasn't a landslide. But I was able to find what I think is an incredibly succinct summary of these facts. This is by NBC commentator Mehdi Hasan, who gets a lot of things really right. Let's take a listen together.
By now, you've probably heard a lot of people say that Donald Trump won the 2024 election in a landslide victory.
President-elect Donald Trump was elected in a landslide.
This is a clean sweep.
Massive landslide victory.
President-elect Donald Trump's landslide re-election win.
Massive, massive landslide.
But what if I told you it wasn't actually a landslide? Because number one, Trump did secure 312 Electoral College votes, comfortably landing himself back in the White House. But while he secured far more than the 270 needed to win, he got fewer Electoral College votes than Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012. And Trump's margin of victory in the Electoral College ranked 44th out of the 60 presidential elections that we've had in the history of this country. 44th. You want to know what an actual Electoral College landslide looks like? Ronald Reagan, 1984. 525 Electoral College votes. Number two, if Harris had picked up just over 120,000 extra votes, 120,000, that's it, across the three blue wall swing states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, she would have won the Electoral College and therefore the election. So not really a landslide then, as even people like me wrongly assumed on election night. Hey, but what about the popular vote? Well, number three, as of today, Trump has won around 50% of the vote, leaving Harris with 48%, with just over a million ballots still being counted in California alone. Trump's margin of victory is expected to dip from just over 2% to around 1.5%. How is a 1.5 percentage point margin of victory a massive landslide win? Hillary Clinton had a bigger margin than that in the popular vote in 2016, and she lost. Joe Biden got more votes in 2020 than Donald Trump got this year, despite a bigger electorate. In fact, a 1.5 percentage point margin of victory would put Trump at number 50 out of the 55 US presidential elections in which the popular vote winner actually became president. 50 out of 55. You wanna know what a popular vote landslide actually looks like? Lyndon B. Johnson, 1964, a whopping 61% of the popular vote and a 22 percentage point margin of victory. See, that's what a landslide looks like, not this. Look, to be clear, Trump won fair and square and perhaps against the odds. But please let's not grade him on a curve again. He didn't win a landslide. He doesn't have a huge electoral mandate. And this is still basically a very divided, 50-50 country.
Yes, a little refreshing reality check. We're going to do this every Monday at 2:20. One of my favorite callers on the line. What's up, CJ? How you doing? CJ, hello, you there? Mandy. Hey, how you doing?
Yes, I'm good. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I really thank you for taking my call because...
Get to it. We got very little time left, CJ.
Well, your perception of what people believe, you just keep believing that. You want to make it about a landslide. It only makes 2020 more suspicious because...
No, it doesn't, CJ. If we were actually rigging elections, why wouldn't we have rigged this one? And again, we're just reporting out a little math and historical facts. I'm sorry, my friend. I have to leave it there. We got to move on. Next up, I've got Tom Moore from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to talk about recess appointments, what that means for democracy, as well as corruption, because money ain't speech and corporations are not people. That's coming up next right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Let's dance in style, let's dance for a while. Heaven can wait, we're only watching the skies. Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not?
We're gonna try to drop some bombs. That's our job here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Folks, you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited to be joined this half hour by Tom Moore. He's the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Fund. And Tom, before we came on air, I was talking about the fact that as odds would have it, I quoted your fellow co-worker, Federal Election Commissioner since 2002, former Federal Election Chairwoman Ellen Weintraub, on Friday as I was discussing the regulatory environment and quoted her extensively on the fact that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people and it all rots the government from within. We may get to that specifically today, Tom, but you are here to help us understand what's going on with Donald Trump's appointments, what the recess appointment process is about. Let's just start right off the top. It's been sort of a parade of interesting picks would be about the most generous way that I can put it, but utterly unqualified at moving towards just guano crazy to essential leadership positions in government. What's your take on where these appointments stand so far? Do you have an absolute favorite bad appointment thus far, Tom?
Boy, it is hard to pick. Matt Gaetz is an obvious choice, but I think Tulsi Gabbard as the Director of National Intelligence is the worst. I mean, that is not just running a department badly and putting bad policy into place. That's actively endangering the safety of the American people. That is, she is all but a Russian asset, and she's the last person you'd want in that job. That is a shocking appointment.
It truly is. I can't get a real hard take on like what happened to Tulsi Gabbard. You go from Democrat to effectively a Russian agent in five easy steps. I mean, what's going on with Tulsi Gabbard? It's bizarre.
Yeah, I have no insight on that. I don't know if anybody else does either. I think there's some, recall there's some like odd family dynamics that kind of worked into where she came from and where she went. But I don't think there's any good explanation for it.
Anybody's guess. It sort of, when all other explanations fail, Tom, I often revert back to rabid self-interest, greed, and power hungriness. And she saw an opportunity and took it.
Nobody ever went broke betting against that. So
yeah, indeed. Indeed. I love it. Often the obvious is the answer. Let's move on to again, we may get into some of these particular appointments, but Cardi, I wanted to take a listen, if you've got it, to Ron Johnson. And he was interviewed by local news here in the Milwaukeeland area. And he had some pretty wild things to say, as Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson often does. Let's take a listen.
Let's start with Matt Gaetz and all the chatter surrounding that. I'm curious, at this point in your mind, will you vote to confirm him for Attorney General?
Well, first of all, I've met Matt a couple times. I know he's got potentially some issues out there. I don't know what they particularly are. I haven't seen the ethics report. So he'll go through the confirmation process, and I'll keep an open mind.
Senator Cornyn has said that he wants that ethics committee investigation made public. Would you like the same?
That'll be up to the committee. I'm not on the committee jurisdiction there.
You know the concern that has floated, even among some Republicans. Do you share those concerns, or are you keeping an open mind at this point on Gaetz?
Matt, I haven't seen the ethics charges. I don't know what's in there. I do know that I really can't trust the corporate and legacy media in terms of what they may be reporting. So I'm just have to see these things for myself. So I've got to reserve judgment. I can't. I mean, you're asking me at this point hypothetical questions.
In this instance, if his confirmation would fail the Senate, do you support the use of recess appointments?
Well, I think President Trump asked the candidates for majority leader whether or not they would support that if it starts getting backed up and he's not able to staff his administration. They all said that they would support that. You know, from my standpoint, the confirmation process has gotten completely out of hand. I would love to work with Democrat colleagues and reduce the number of confirmable positions. This is absurd. You know, as U.S. Senator, I don't particularly like being the Human Resource Department for the administration. I think elections matter, and presidents ought to be able to staff their administrations. Now, I can see the need for 100, maybe 200 confirmable positions. Even that's an awful lot.
So do you support the use of recess appointments?
Yes.
You are praising Trump's pick for HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You just posted that he's a very good person with tremendous courage. But doctors and the medical community are adamant that what he said about vaccines and autism is false, that they don't cause autism. Does that concern you at all?
No, because I think what we need to do is we need to actually take a look at uncorrupted science. There's never been a placebo-controlled study on childhood vaccines, not one. Anthony Fauci lied and said they had some, but they haven't done so. We need to have the courage to ask, what has caused this explosion in autism? What has caused this explosion of chronic illness?
Why should we not be listening to doctors and the medical community about this science?
I do listen to doctors and medical community, and there's a variety of opinions on this, and there are all kinds of medical studies that the mainstream media and the Big Pharma simply refused to acknowledge and look at.
Well, I'm so glad you're not on corporate legacy mainstream media, Tom, because presumptively by Ron's definition, we'll get this just right. And I did want to make a very quick on the record check of the senator. The way that the senator and RFK Jr. define placebo studies require basically the use of water and or like salt water as the placebo. There are two things here. One, that is generally not what a placebo is in medical trials. That's just a misnomer. And by narrowly defining that, they define placebos out of the realm. The second thing is medical ethics generally dictate that you do not use placebo trials when we know something might save a child's life as it is considered inhumane. There are examples throughout history, including the polio vaccine, where in fact placebo trials were done to basically the horror of all involved placebo trials on children. They are not considered to meet the bare minimum of medical ethics because children die. So Ron Johnson, again, know nothing, Rojo, harming and misinforming the American public. Some other favorites from that were, let's see, not the HR department for the administration. Apparently, Ron Johnson wants to do away with Article 2's advise and consent powers. Your reactions to that, Tom, and if you could explain a little bit about the appointment process and how that would work in a recess appointment process in contrast.
Yeah, sure. So everybody's heard about the checks and balances in our Constitution. And one of the really important checks in there is that, no, in fact, the president can't appoint whoever he or she wants to really important jobs. Senator Johnson was complaining about the long list of people that have to be confirmed. And, you know, maybe that list could be shorter, but it would definitely still include, you know, Secretary of Defense, you know, Director of National Intelligence, HHS secretary. He's kind of dodging on that one a little bit. But basically, the idea is that, yeah, you know, the president can nominate people, but they are confirmed by the Senate. And they, you know, that was true for Commissioner Weintraub. It's true for everybody who serves in a senior post in the government. And it's not serving as the HR department of the executive branch. It is one of the most important things the Senate does. And it is a duty that's entrusted to them, and not the House, just the Senate does this. And it's an amazingly important piece of what makes our government work. And this idea of recess appointments that's being kicked around, there's a couple different alarming scenarios on that. That is a way to get past or to let the Senate dodge its responsibility to do that. So, take it from the top. In the 18th century, when the Constitution was written, people were on horse and buggy, and it took them a long time to get back to the Capitol. And they, you know, someone might die in office, and the Senate might not be able to get back together for a couple months. So, that's why they allowed these recess appointments, where if the Senate is out for a certain amount of time, the president can just say, like, all right, we'll just stick this person in. They're a recess appointment. And the Constitution says that they can serve until the end of the next session of Congress. And so if this happened in February, this coming February, 2025, somebody who is recess appointed to a job could serve until the end of 2026, that entire Congress, basically. And recess appointments themselves are not a terrible thing. And, Commissioner Weintraub actually was a recess appointment the first time around, then she was confirmed later. It's what is being proposed here is very, very different from this, which is that the Senate not just happened to be in recess, but calls itself into recess to allow the president to just dump all of his nominees through and have them serve for two solid years without ever getting anybody getting a good look at them.
Has there ever been, Tom, I'm curious, has there ever been an instance in United States history where recess appointments were used to push through like a whole group of appointments? I was trying to... What were the factual predicates that would have led to that? Was there some natural disaster or something? And I was trying to go through some historic, and I couldn't find any. Do you know of any?
I'm not aware of any. Plenty of officials have been recess appointed. Plenty of good officials have. You know, that is not, and you know, that is not what is being proposed here. And there's this other variation on it, which is really scary. And it is using a part of the Constitution that's never been used before to not just, you know, if Senate leaders decide to call a recess for a long, you know, long enough period of time, Trump can do these recess appointments. But there's another way to do it so that House Speaker Mike Johnson can, and working with Trump, can actually force the Senate into recess. There's another clause in Article 2, which handles the executive branch, that says if the House and Senate cannot agree on the time of an adjournment, the president can just step in and adjourn them. until he sees fit to whatever time he'd like to unadjourn them. And the thought here is that, you know, Mike Johnson could say to the Senate, all right, let's recess for a month, say. And the Senate says, we don't want to do that. And they say, oh, look, we have a disagreement. Trump comes in, adjourns both bodies, and then he can dump his appointees through. That's pretty bad. That would be an unprecedented power play. A lot of House Republicans would have to go with it.
But. Yeah, and completely frightening, right? Because the idea that a president could use a disagreement about whether or not a House of Congress should be in session to effectively force his appointments through, again, nearly certain that's never been done. And it is a gutting of Article 2 when it comes to the appointment of crucial. We're not talking about people three or four levels down the food chain. We're talking about the leaders of these absolutely critical appointments of executive branch departments, many of whom would have high-level security clearances and have access to our nation's most sensitive secrets and information. We're going to have to take care of a little bit of business here. My guest this half hour is Tom Moore. He's the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. From 2015 to 2013, Tom served as counsel and then chief of staff to Commissioner Ellen Weintraub of the Federal Election Commission. I was quoting Ellen on Friday. This interview was meant to happen. You're going to want to keep it locked, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, not legacy media, not corporate media, not traditional media, you know, outlier media, disruptors, where you always find real news and great conversation. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Cause baby, now we got bad blood. You know it used to be mad love. So take a look what you've done. Cause baby, now we got bad blood.
Hey, I can't take it back.
I'm going to have some bad blood for the appointee to the Federal Communications Commission, Brendan Carr, because apparently he thinks he should be doing all sorts of new brand new enforcement for radio stations like this one, but apparently not worrying about anything else because there's nothing going on in the information sphere that any of us should be worried about. No, nothing to see here. Yes, you know, radio stations, that's what you need to be worried about, Brendan. Everybody, my guest today is Tom Moore. He's the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about Donald Trump's appointees to date, the recess appointment process, this power under the Constitution that's never been used before, that effectively would enable a president to keep Congress out of business and cram through some recess appointments. What was that section of Article 2, Tom, just in case anybody was taking notes at home?
Sorry about that. It's Article 2, Section 3, and it basically says if there's a disagreement as to the time that the House and Senate adjourn, the president can come in and just adjourn them until what time he sees fit. And it's never been used. Usually the House and the Senate figure out what they want to do, and that just works fine. But this, you know, this would be a way for the House Speaker working with Trump to run roughshod over the Senate, even if the Senate wanted to stay in session and wanted to confirm all these appointees, the president could jump in and do that. What's kind of scary about it is like, boy, that sounds unconstitutional. Boy, that sounds like a separation of powers problem. And boy, that sounds like against the spirit of the Constitution. It's like, yeah, it's all those things, but it's also right there in the text of the Constitution that he can do that. So it is very, very worrisome. And they're starting. Mike Johnson was asked on Fox News over the weekend whether this kind of thing would happen. And he's like, you know, basically he's keeping his options open on it, which was a very bad sign. He should have said no.
There's a lot of things Mike Johnson probably should edit out of his public commentary, but he just keeps stumbling right into them. I also thought this was fascinating. I'm not sure if you caught this, Tom. Over the weekend, current Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell put out a tweet that said there will be no recess appointments. And Senator Rick Scott immediately tweeted back and said, yes, there will. And then McConnell deleted his tweet. I mean, the fact that this is now how elected officials are communicating amongst one another is worthy of its own set of commentary. But I thought it was just bizarre. Like, Mitch McConnell, it ain't going to be your call.
Well, Mitch McConnell's a master of the Senate rules. And he actually is, as much as I disagree with him on almost every priority he has, he is an institutionalist and he does believe in that the Senate should keep its own prerogatives. And he's, you know what, if between the two of them, if I had to bet on one of them, I'd bet on Mitch McConnell's take on it, because knows the rules better than anybody.
As between McConnell and Rick Scott, yes, absolutely. But I found the dynamics between what I would call the more traditional conservative faction within the Senate, whom in their own secret ballot chose their next majority leader, right, that came from that more traditional conservative group in the Senate and didn't pick the MAGA-favored Rick Scott. The fact that they were actually publicly teeing off against each other was just fascinating. But let's talk about that other bright shining star of Congress, Representative Matt Gaetz, also of Florida.
Representative Matt Gaetz.
Yes, former. Thank you. And much to everyone's relief and then shock and horror. I don't think there can be any reasonable debate that there has never been ever a more unqualified appointee in modern American history to the attorney general position. Jeff Sessions is probably maybe a close second, but not. No, you just tell us your reactions to Matt Gaetz and place it in some kind of historical context. Why should this matter to people?
Yeah, so it's with Gaetz, it's not a matter of just being unqualified for the position. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard is grossly unqualified for the position. She never served on an intelligence committee or anything like that. Gaetz's problem runs deeper than being unqualified. Gaetz's problem is that he actively wants to use the Justice Department for terrible ends. Apparently, the reason he got the nomination got the nomination from Trump is that he went on a plane ride with him and basically said, "And I'm going to clean this up a little bit. I'll go in and bust heads if you make me Attorney General." And where everybody else who was talking to Trump was talking about their constitutional interpretation philosophies and so forth. And Gaetz was just like, no, I will use this as an instrument to wreak vengeance for you. And that is terrible. That is worse than just being unqualified. That is actively, malignantly un-American and unpatriotic. Yeah.
The other thing that really scares me about Matt Gaetz is that the nature of the allegations against him are so salacious that if I was a foreign adversary of the United States, the possibility for compromising information and the potential to lever and turn someone into an agent of a foreign power is at its highest when you have done all kinds of really, really bad things that you don't want to have become public, which, I don't know, you could probably say might apply to a whole gamut of Trump's appointees. I can't believe our time is already up, Tom. We got to leave it there. Such a pleasure. Thank you so much, folks. That was Tom, want to get your last name right, Moore, Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I'd love to talk again specifically about corruption in government and your old boss, Ellen Weintraub. She is a fighter. I'm Maggie Dawn, everybody. We'll be back here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to talk more about corruption in government and what you can do about it. That's next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.